The Court is in special session this afternoon to receive the resolutions of the Bar of the Supreme Court in tribute to Chief Justice William H. Rehnquist. The Court recognizes the Solicitor General.
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the Court, at a meeting today of the Bar of this Court, resolutions memorializing our deep respect and affection for Chief Justice Rehnquist were unanimously adopted. Today, the members of the Bar of the Supreme Court honor the life and legacy of a gifted lawyer, a selfless public servant, and a treasured teacher, mentor, and friend. Those who knew William Rehnquist will remember him as one who, in the words of Justice Holmes, lived greatly in the law. To his credit, however, he cared less about being great than about doing and living well. As President George W. Bush remarked, to work beside William Rehnquist was to learn how a wise man looks at the law and how a good man looks at life. Rehnquist was born in Wisconsin on October 1, 1924, the son of a paper salesman and a homemaker who spoke five languages and worked as a translator. He was raised in Shorewood, a Milwaukee suburb near Lake Michigan, and graduated from high school in 1942. Shortly thereafter, he joined the United States Army Air Corps. His wartime service took him to a number of domestic posts and also to more exotic destinations in North Africa. His time there impressed upon him that, quote, if you lived in the right place, you didn't have to shovel snow for 4 months a year. Accordingly, after discharging from the service as a sergeant, he headed west to Stanford University in 1946. After graduating from Stanford and completing a year of graduate study at Harvard, Rehnquist returned to Stanford, where he flourished at the law school. Upon graduation, he served as a law clerk for Justice Robert Jackson. Rehnquist later described his clerkships as, quote, one of the most rewarding experiences of my life. Rehnquist's time in Washington proved doubly rewarding, for during this period, he began dating Natalie Nan Cornell, whom he married in August of 1953. Characteristically unconventional, Rehnquist passed up opportunities at lucrative East Coast law firms and chose Phoenix. During his 16 years of private practice there, Rehnquist represented a broad array of clients. He was also active in politics and civic life. Through it all, he maintained a balanced life. He would work from 8:30 a.m. to 5 p.m., then close the law books and go home. He and Nan were blessed with three children, Jim, Janet, and Nancy, and the Rehnquist family managed to take a month's vacation together each year. After the 1968 presidential election, Rehnquist was nominated and confirmed as Assistant Attorney General for the Office of Legal Counsel. Rehnquist discharged his responsibilities with such great distinction that when Justice John Marshall Harlan retired in 1971, Rehnquist was the President's choice to be the 100th Associate Justice of the Supreme Court of the United States. Confirmed in 1972 at age 47, Rehnquist was one of the youngest justices in modern history. As an associate justice, he emerged as a powerful intellectual force. He authored a number of significant opinions for the court, but he did not hesitate to express his position in solitary dissent, thus inspiring an early group of law clerks to bestow upon him a Lone Ranger doll as a mantelpiece. When Chief Justice Warren Burger resigned in 1986, it was precisely Rehnquist's powerful intellect, his stellar record on the court, and his consistent judicial philosophy that made him President Ronald Reagan's pick to lead the court. As Rehnquist took his new seat as the leader of the court in 1986, President Reagan presciently remarked that he will be a Chief Justice of historic stature. Rehnquist's jurisprudential legacy was indeed substantial, especially in areas of criminal procedure, religious liberty, and due process. His influence was, however, perhaps most evident in the court's cases involving federalism. As early as 1975, he made clear his position on regulating the states as states under the Commerce Clause power. Dissenting alone, Rehnquist argued that the federal government must treat the states like sovereign entities rather than individuals. As happened a number of times during his tenure, Rehnquist's position in dissent ultimately was embraced by a majority of the court. Rehnquist's promotion of federalism ultimately served as the basis for the court's anti-commandeering principle, its strengthening of the state's sovereign immunity, and its reaffirmance of, quote, judicially enforceable outer limits on the Commerce Clause power in United States against Lopez. Rehnquist's legacy on the Supreme Court, however, involves much more than doctrinal contributions and noteworthy decisions. He encouraged and exemplified collegiality, fairness, and graciousness among the justices. Of course, for those attorneys privileged enough to argue before the court during his long tenure, his legacy is as much about his commanding presence on the bench as his approach to the Constitution or conference. Rehnquist's view of oral argument was emblematic of his no-nonsense approach to judging and to life. Rehnquist preferred plain-spoken arguments to flowery rhetoric. And although he was a kind and easygoing man, he adopted a stern and no-nonsense demeanor on the bench, running arguments with Nordic precision and always with the utmost respect for the red light. Above and beyond his demanding official duties, Rehnquist pursued and cultivated a rich array of interests and passions. Families, friends, and law clerks remember well his dedication to afternoon swims and weekly tennis matches, his friendly wagering on football, his love of trivia and charades, and his interest in and voluminous knowledge of sports, literature, geography, and art. Rehnquist also served as historian-in-chief, writing numerous books on history, which also foreshadowed the next chapters in our nation's own history. William Rehnquist served well his country, his profession, and the Constitution. All the while, he embraced the value, interest, and importance of ordinary, everyday life. He took to heart Dr. Johnson's dictum that to be happy at home is the end of all human endeavor. He exhorted law school graduates to realize that their abilities and opportunities gave them choices, and that how wisely you make these choices will determine how well spent you think your life is when you look back at it. Gathered here together, looking back at his life, the members of the Bar of the Supreme Court are pleased and honored to announce the opinion, and no doubt the Chief is pleased that it is unanimous, that his was a great life exceedingly well spent. On behalf of the Bar of the Supreme Court, it is my privilege to present to the Court the resolutions adopted today so that the Deputy Attorney General may move their inscription on the Court's permanent record.
Thank you, General Clement. The Court recognizes the Deputy Attorney General of the United States.
Mr. Chief Justice, may it please the Court. On behalf of the Attorney General, I am pleased to say that the Bar of the Court met today to honor the memory of William H. Rehnquist, Associate Justice of the Supreme Court from 1971 to 1986, and Chief Justice of the United States from 1986 to 2005. William Rehnquist served his country with great honor and distinction. He was a patriot who deeply appreciated the virtues and foundations of our constitutional government. He had a giant intellect, but lacked all pretense and was known for his collegiality and sense of humor. And during his 33 years on this court, he made a profound contribution to the American rule of law. When he was only a child, William Rehnquist told his elementary school teacher that he was going to change the government. Not long thereafter, he embarked on a path of public service and accomplishment that would lead him to fulfill that prediction. His journey of public service began when he joined the Army as a teenager to serve his country during World War II. He served as a law clerk to one of the legendary figures in American law, Justice Robert Jackson, and he later served as an assistant attorney general in the Nixon administration. At the Department of Justice, it has been said that he converted what was then a little-known post, the Office of Legal Counsel, into one of the key positions of the administration. He also successfully argued a case before this court, after which he remarked he was drenched in sweat. But that was just the beginning. In 1971, Rehnquist, only in his 40s, was appointed to this court. He immediately became known for his fierce intellect, lone dissents, and conservative jurisprudence. He also impressed his new colleagues with his affable, down-to-earth Midwestern demeanor, if not his trademark sideburns and thick-rimmed glasses. When Chief Justice Berger retired in 1986, President Reagan saw in Rehnquist the measure of a great Chief Justice. As President Reagan explained, Rehnquist had distinguished himself for his intellectual power, the lucidity of his opinions, and the respect he enjoys among his colleagues. When asked about his nomination to be Chief Justice, Rehnquist, flashing his characteristic wit and self-deprecation, replied, "I wouldn't call it the culmination of a dream, but it's not every day when you're 61 years old that you get a chance to have a new job." Chief Justice Rehnquist had a profound impact on the court and our legal system. He authored close to 1,000 opinions, presided over almost as many oral arguments, and administered the oath of office on 5 occasions to 3 different presidents. He was only the second Chief Justice to preside over impeachment proceedings against the sitting president. He managed the court with unrivaled efficiency, and he was uniformly praised by his colleagues for his fairness, impartiality, good humor, and selfless leadership on his watch. Chief Justice Rehnquist held the public decorum of the court in the highest regard and had a powerful presence at the center of the bench. He presided over perhaps the most active bench in the history of this court. As a result, during oral argument, he often assumed the role of Master Sergeant, a role he accented by the gold stripes he wore on his robe in later years. He made virtually immeasurable contributions to American constitutional law. He was a key participant in the court's decisions, placing limits on the Miranda rule, recognizing greater leeway for the police in conducting searches under the Fourth Amendment, and in enforcing the limits of federal habeas corpus review of state court criminal convictions. His respect for the role of the states in our constitutional government sparked a revitalization of the doctrine of federalism. In 1975, Rehnquist wrote in dissent that surely there can be no more fundamental constitutional question than that of the intention of the framers of the Constitution as to how authority should be allocated between the national and state governments. In time, his dissenting views on the role of federalism and the enumerated limits on federal legislative power secured a majority on the court in a number of important cases, including the court's landmark decision in United States versus Lopez. Chief Justice Rehnquist believed strongly in the virtues of judicial restraint. He cautioned that permitting non-elected members of the federal judiciary to resolve divisive social issues that were not addressed by the Constitution was genuinely corrosive for the fundamental values of our democratic society. He invoked such principles in his opinion for the court in Washington versus Glucksberg, in which the court refused to invoke the Due Process Clause as a means of invalidating a state's assistant suicide ban. As an associate justice, Rehnquist wrote passionately in dissent that the court's church-state jurisprudence had broken free from its constitutional and historic moorings. As Chief Justice, he led the court in a number of important Establishment Clause cases, including the court's landmark decision of 4 terms ago upholding Cleveland's student voucher program. Chief Justice Rehnquist was an ardent advocate on behalf of the federal judiciary and a champion of an independent judiciary. In his annual reports on the state of the federal judiciary, he addressed head-on and without pretense or partisanship the major issues confronting the judiciary each year. And in his 19th and final year-end report, he wrote that it is judicial independence that has made our judicial system a model for much of the world. Chief Justice Rehnquist was too modest to speak about his own place in history, but he once observed his own insights as to what made John Marshall such a great Chief Justice. He explained that Marshall had a remarkable ability to reason from general principles. He was able to write clearly and cogently. And every bit as important, he was very well liked. William Rehnquist shared those same qualities with Marshall. He had a brilliant analytical mind and an encyclopedic knowledge of the law. As he proved in his legendary Lone Ranger dissents, he was a powerful and lucid writer. And every bit as important, he was a beloved man who earned the trust, confidence, and deep admiration of his colleagues. Chief Justice Rehnquist was a stalwart of the federal judiciary and a faithful guardian of our Constitution. Few Americans have contributed more to this court or their country in the cause of justice and the rule of law. He deserves his place alongside the nation's great chief justices, and the country owes him an enormous debt of gratitude for a life of devoted public service. Mr. Chief Justice, and on behalf of the Attorney General, the lawyers of this nation, and in particular the bar of this court, I respectfully request that the resolutions presented to you in honor of the memory of Chief Justice William Rehnquist be accepted by the court, and that they, together with the chronicle of these proceedings, be ordered kept for all time in the records of this court.
Thank you, Mr. McNulty and General Clement, for your presentations. Your motion that the bar resolutions be made part of the permanent record of the court is granted. We also extend to Chairman Steve Colleton and members of the Committee on Resolutions, Chairman John Nannis and members of the Arrangements Committee, and Ronald Tempest, Chairman of today's meeting of the bar, our appreciation for the resolutions that you have adopted today. William H. Rehnquist was nominated to the Supreme Court by President Nixon on October 21, 1971, and joined the court as its 100th member on January 7, 1972. In 1986, President Reagan nominated him as our nation's 16th Chief Justice, and he took the oath for that office on September 26, 1986. In his nearly 34 years on the court, Chief Justice Rehnquist wrote 458 opinions for the court, beginning with Schnebel v. Florida in 1972 and ending with Van Orden v. Perry in 2005. He served with 16 other justices. You have heard described the Chief's legacy in specific areas of the law, such as criminal procedure, federalism, state immunity, and freedom of religion. But perhaps his most significant contribution was broader than any particular area of the law. Over his years on the bench, Chief Justice Rehnquist helped bring a sharper focus to the work of the court. This manifested itself in many ways. During oral arguments, he would maintain focus on the precise question upon which the court had granted certiorari, often to the frustration of arguing counsel. An assertion by a lawyer about what a statute meant was likely to be met by a question from the chief about what it said. Perhaps his trademark question from the bench, regularly asked whenever a lawyer propounded a broad assertion on a point of law, was, "Which one of our cases supports that proposition?" What was remarkable was the chief's ability to distinguish on the spot any offered citation that the chief thought was not on point. The chief brought the same rigor he expected of counsel to his own work. His opinions are notable for being clear and concise. They generally exhibit a spareness that the chief thought was beneficial, not only to lower courts and lawyers bound to apply them, but also to the proper development of the law. There were exceptions to this rule. An opinion on an obscure Postal Service regulation might contain a fascinating sidebar on the history of the Pony Express. The minutiae of a water rights opinion might be broken up by a disquisition on the first irrigation project in the arid West. That was just the chief's love of history and a good story coming through, and the readers of his opinions were richer for it. The chief's colleagues on the bench have spoken often of their high regard and genuine affection for him, and they have commented on the fairness with which he administered the court. From the time he hung out a shingle in Phoenix for a two-person law firm, in which his partner was the head of the Young Democrats, William Rehnquist never allowed differing views on even fundamental issues to prevent him from enjoying warm and close friendships with people from all walks of life. You've heard the Chief Justice described in the bar meeting as a great lawyer, a mentor, teacher, colleague, and friend. But there's no doubt that he was first and foremost a loving husband to Nan and dedicated father to his children, Jim, Janet, and Nancy. He managed to make it home for dinner almost every evening and to take a month's vacation with his family each summer. He knew what was important in life. Chief Justice Rehnquist was an accomplished historian who wrote 4 books. He could quote poetry for any occasion. Name just about any city in the world, and he could likely tell you its population and weather, and probably the nearest body of water and mountain range. He enjoyed card and board games, a trivia and charades expert, and he was the only person I have ever witnessed lie down on his stomach to line up a shot at croquet. He was a patriot who loved and served his country. More than anyone I've known, he trusted in himself. He was direct and straightforward, utterly without pretense, and completely unaffected in manner. Ralph Waldo Emerson's 1841 essay, Self-Reliance, contains a line that the chief liked. "Trust thyself. Every heart vibrates to that iron string." There's another passage in that same essay that the chief liked that I think aptly describes his approach to the law and to life. These are Emerson's words. "What I must do is all that concerns me, not what the people think. This rule, equally arduous in actual and in intellectual life, may serve for the whole distinction between greatness and meanness. It is the harder because you will always find those who think they know what is your duty better than you know it. It is easy in the world to live after the world's opinion. It is easy in solitude to live after our own. But the great man is he who, in the midst of the crowd, keeps with perfect sweetness the independence of solitude." We pay tribute today to a great man. He will be missed by his colleagues, his friends, family, and all of us whose lives he touched. Please join us now in the conference rooms for a reception.